and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us John Valentino of Salaron, and we're going to talk about the intention carrier or random event generator. I don't know what you want to call it, John, but it's the thing that Princeton's been working on for so long. How are you?
I'm great.
Thanks for being with me tonight. Take a few minutes before we get started with questions. Tell us a little bit about you and about Salaron, where we can find you, email, web address.
Sure. I run a company called Salaron. It's spelled P-S-Y-L-E-R-O-N, and you can find it at Salaron.com on the internet. Prior to starting Salaron, I worked at a place called the Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research Lab, on and off for about 5 years. And the Pear Lab, as we call it, studied the idea that the human mind could influence the output of devices known as random event generators. And Pear did this in sort of a very academic, research-oriented kind of way. They brought what we call them operators into a lab and had them sit down in front of this device called a random event generator and attempt to shape its output. And while I was working at Pear, one of the things I noticed was that, well, it seemed to me like there was indeed an effect. It did seem like consciousness was able to influence the output of these devices. And I thought that it would be really great to give people in the public, you know, who weren't coming to the lab, the opportunity to sort of see this for themselves or experience it the way that their mind could influence the output of these devices. So Salaron was founded with the help and support of the Pear Lab to basically create these same random event generator devices that the lab used, as well as some devices like a color-changing lamp that's driven by a random event generator, so that we could give them, well, we sell them, but so we could get them out into the public and allow people to sort of explore this on their own.
And where can they, how can they contact you if they have questions?
Oh, they can go to www.pyleron.com, and there are a whole bunch of links on there where they can either join our mailing list and send us a comment, they could send us an email. They could also call us at the office, and, you know, we're happy to talk with people and explain a little bit more about what we're doing or what they might, you know, do with our devices.
I have to say, I have one of these things, and it's a very affordable thing, less than, I don't know, $300, I think, isn't it? I don't remember, but it's a very affordable thing, and I love it. I play with it all the time, so I have lots of questions for you.
So you use the mind lamp, is that true?
Do what?
I believe that you bought a mind lamp.
I did.
The color-changing lamp that's driven by the random event.
Yeah, and not only do I love playing with it, but I love the colors. It's almost like color therapy sometimes. My friend has this thing in his shower. He has a steamer in his shower, and he has this color light that rotates randomly, just like this thing, except it's not a consciousness unit. So it's almost like color therapy, too. It's wonderful. I love it. Okay, the first thing I want to ask you is, what is the difference between this random event generator and an intention carrier?
Well, I guess I'll have to start with a question for you, which is, so how would you define an intention carrier?
Well, I was more along thinking about the things that Bill Tiller did, you know, where he and Norm and their wives placed an intention in that little, I forget what he called it, that little box, you know, and used it to change pH and affect growth rates and things like that.
Yep.
What's the difference between the two?
Well, I'm only vaguely familiar with Bill Tiller's work, but if I have it correct, what he's done is he's created devices which may be called, this is the idea, intention-embedded device or something like that.
Yeah.
So I believe that those are mostly, they're little devices like a material which they then sort of attempt to imbue an intention into, and the device will then be different based on the intention that they put to it. Is that
the device will be? I don't think the device is different, but I think that results happen.
Right.
Whatever
okay.
intention they embed, something happens.
Yes, so there's a shift in the physical character of the device.
Right.
Well, the thing about the random event generator, I suppose, is that the random event generator is, and again, this, I'm really speaking from a naive perspective here relative to Bill Tiller's work, but the random event generator is constantly generating new outcomes and feeding them to a computer or using it to change the output of the color of the lamp. Mm-hmm. And so in a sense, a person has to continuously try to affect that over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing that, they're sort of receiving feedback on their immediate intention at that moment. So in some sense, it's a device for either A, conducting ongoing, constantly repeatable statistical experiments using a single device, or it can be used in sort of a feedback mode for people to sort of explore their own states of consciousness and how they're changing state of consciousness on a moment-to-moment basis causes the device to respond.
For some reason, I was under the impression that you could place and embed an intention in this thing so that it constantly carried that. Is that not right?
In the Celeron devices?
Yes.
Well, what we do... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say that if you got into an altered state of mind,
yep,
or if the thing becomes non-random,
mm-hmm,
and you place an intention and then sealed it off, that it would constantly carry that intention.
You know, that may be completely possible. It's hard for us to know because in our experiments, what we normally do is we collect data from the device and we see how it behaves by itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have people come into the lab, let's say, or they take the lamp and they put it in their living room, or they come to our lab and use the lamp. And what they do is they try to, let's say, change the color of the lamp or try to skew the output of the device. And then what we do, at least from a scientific standpoint, is try to look and see if the output that we get under those specific conditions is any different from what the device produces by itself. And we've never actually tried or been able to do a study where someone tries to essentially permanently shift the output such that at every future moment in time we see a change in the device's output.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, we almost had design the device that wouldn't behave that way, because part of the premise, at least in the lab, is that we want the device to behave one way when no one is trying to influence it, but behave completely normally when no one is there. So it should be a situation where you attempt to influence it, we collect your data, and then you go away and we show that the data is exactly what it normally is. And then later you come back to influence again, et cetera. And over the course of, you know, millions of these experiments, we build up a database which suggests that the human mind is able to skew the output of these devices. But probably, especially if you get into Bill Tiller's work and things like that, the real issue is that the human mind is able to, or consciousness or intention or something, is able to interact with much more in the world than we would ever expect. It's just that the random event generators give us a specific way to test it and measure it statistically.
So is it basically letting you know when you're in that cohesive state? Is that what it's doing?
The lamp can absolutely do that, at least from the standpoint of user feedback, because what we tend to find is that, so in a laboratory experiment, we collect a bunch of data with the device, and over lots and lots and lots of trials, we can show that there is a very small but very statistically significant shift in the output. However, so you, just on the basis of that data, it's hard to say anything about people's states of mind. But the big however is that many users who work with the lamp or work with the REGs or things like that will tell us that sometimes they just feel like they're in the zone or they're in the right place or there's something going on. They feel like they're in some state of mind, and that when they're in this state of mind, whatever it is, and I think it does vary from person to person, they're then able to sort of interact with, let's say, the lamp at a much deeper level.
Mm-hmm.
So someone may, you know, 80% of the time walk around their house and look at the lamp and they just say, oh, that's a nice, pretty color-changing lamp. But then other times they feel like they're in some sort of altered state, or they subjectively feel like they've got a lot of luck, or again, it really varies. And then they'll go in and they'll sit with it, and they feel like they're able to make the color shift to wherever they want it to. So in that sense, at least based on what our users come back to us with, it sounds exactly like what you're saying, which is that it can help reflect people's states back to them and help be a tool to allow them to know when they are in a place to maybe tweak the output a little bit.
Right.
Or tweak
now,
things.
I've noticed personally that I have a sacred space in my house.
Mm-hmm.
And I particularly notice it when I get down here and do interviews like this, or if I'm preparing for my show, so that I know I'm in a very focused state. And I've noticed that the lamp always, for instance, right this moment, it either sticks on kind of an aquamarine color
mm-hmm.
or this violet fuchsia kind of color, always. And it'll do it for hours without moving. Why is it sticking on just one of those two colors? Is it kind of like the electromagnetic spectrum where it'll stop on the color that maybe the frequency your mind is at?
Well, first, it's really fascinating that you're able to constantly get those colors and have it sit there.
I don't do anything. I just notice that that's what it does.
Sure. Now, I guess what we tend to find when we talk with people about it is that different colors have different meanings to different people, and the process sort of, let's say people are able to influence it. There are people who influence it, and they have a meaning associated with each color, and then they go and they work with it, and they will find that particular colors come up that have a meaning for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my question for you would be, do those colors have any special meaning for
Absolutely
you?
Absolutely nothing.
None whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Then it,
but it's
really
always those two colors. It's not blue, and it's not red, and it's not green. It's that violet, or either it's that turquoise green. And it'll stay there for hours without budging.
Yeah, I mean, that's really fascinating, because what happens is, normally, it's based on what you're saying, it sounds like something is influencing that device, because the lamp should, if no one is influencing it, just, you know, randomly roam from color to color, and it should be on red just as much as it's on blue or just as much as it's on purple or something like that. But what you're talking about, particularly staying on a color for hours nonetheless, is, you know, it's indicative of some kind of influence. It shouldn't be electromagnetic. It shouldn't be anything in the normal physical environment. I would be tempted to say that it's an influence of consciousness. But then you also say that you're not sure what the colors, or they mean nothing to you?
No.
So it's
all
really
I know,
an amazing sort of phenomenon.
All I know is that I'm focused when it happens. I'm still, and I'm not thinking. I'm just there, you know, doing something focused. Channeling, really, if you want to know the truth, is usually what I'm doing. And
yeah,
it's always one of those two. And one time it did a weird thing. It, like, had this burst of white light, like kind of like a star, and it just burst into this really white light and then went back to what it was. It's only done that one time, though.
The white is an interesting thing, because white is sort of a, the way the lamp is programmed, when a very, very improbable event is detected in the random event generator, so sometimes it's due to a strong influence by a person, the lamp will, you know, go into a bright white and then fade off to another color. So that's sort of a special event.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's just to be honest about it, one of the whole points of Sauron is that we want to get these things out into the world and hear about people's experiences, because we don't know, you know, why any particular color happens or this, that, or the other thing. What we do know is that people, at least some people, and in our aggregated databases, we see evidence that people are able to get into different states of mind, or that people are able to use their intention or some element of their consciousness to tweak the output of these things. So these things can become a feedback on the user's consciousness, and it allows us to see that there's some kind of effect going on in the world that most of mainstream science can't really make sense of, or, you know, doesn't even care to believe exists right now.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, it's really not, I'm not providing much insight here except to say that we really thrive on hearing things like what you're telling us and then asking people to sort of, you know, figure out what it means to them. I can say, you know, given what you're telling me, that it sounds like there's an effect. So your being in a state of sort of intense focus or meditation or anything like that would be the kind of thing that we would expect to affect the device. I just have no idea why it would be those two particular colors.
It's interesting, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, different people will come to us with different stories. some people will, especially with children, you know, will report that, you know, their child comes into the room and they get a particular color, or that before bed, you know, their son will watch it on the bedpost and he's often able to make it keep going to a certain color.
Mm-hmm.
And we really have no idea why that would happen, but it is interesting that these things seem to be sort of idiosyncratic and related to certain people. But really, we tell people to kind of look for their own meaning, because often, at least in our other experiments and with some of the things that we do, it seems like it's not a specific property of the device. It's more a property of sort of the consciousness interacting with it. So red may mean something very different to person A than it does to person
right.
B, but it may still occur in very powerful, meaningful ways to both of those people. So,
another thing that I happen to notice that I'll share with you is I notice in the middle of the night, let's say when I get up to go to the bathroom, I may get up a couple of times,
mm-hmm.
say between 2 and 5, it's always violet at that time. I don't know why. Maybe the world's still or something. I don't know. But it's always violet. Always. Now, another thing I wanted to ask you, if you're trying to get, let's talk a minute about trying to embed an intention, if
mm-hmm.
it would do that, how would you, let's see if I can word this right, how do you, you know, to get cohesive, you kind of have to stop thought.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you embed an intention yet stop thought at the same time to hold it still? Otherwise, if you're thinking, then it's going to be random. How would you embed the intention? Would you think what you wanted to embed and then stop thinking and that go there?
Well, that's a really interesting question, and I think it gets at the essence of sort of the practice of trying to influence things like this. And I think that the value that the lamp adds in most people's lives is allowing them to experience exactly the issue that you're talking about. And from a laboratory standpoint, or even when we talk to people about how to influence these things, we generally, there's no hard and fast rule on how they should influence it or what they need to do in order to make it happen. But it does seem like people who sort of become too cognitively engaged, or who are thinking too hard at it or something, they don't have the most luck. People who are constantly worried about the results or overanalyzing what they're doing, you know, they don't have the most luck. The people who do well seem to be sort of relaxed, calmly focused. I mean, it's almost like having an intention but not being too attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
And right now I'm talking based on what people will describe to us when they do well, and then we go back to them and ask, you know, what happened. One term that people at the Paralab use is called high indifference. And the idea of this thing, high indifference, I suppose, is that on the one hand, it's like the person does have a goal in mind, but on the other hand, they're quiet and calm and relaxed. And they're just sort of there. They're just part of the moment and trying to, you know, let something happen. What I find happens for most people who work with the LAMP device, let's say even the REG on their computer, is that actually the entire process of working with it, and it could take months, is just the process of trying to figure out exactly what you're talking about. So people will maybe get a lamp. Let's just say it's a person who's not that familiar with this, or they've never meditated, or they've never tried to influence any process like this before, etc. They'll buy the lamp, and they'll have it, and for the first few days, they kind of play around with it. They're not really sure if it responds or doesn't respond, but they think it's interesting. Then they'll go and they'll set it up in their house somewhere, and they just kind of leave it there. And kind of in the back of their mind, they're curious about whether or not it can be influenced. So every once in a while, they'll walk by and they'll notice what state it's in, etc., and they're just kind of going about their life. Then over some period of time, they'll start to notice a pattern, like maybe what you're talking about, which is they'll start to notice that it just happens to seem like maybe when they do a certain thing, it becomes a certain color. So they associate, maybe they associate meaning, maybe they don't, but they start to associate a color with an event or with some kind of happening or something that they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
That happens enough, and then all of a sudden they say, wait a second, let me see if I can try to, you know, influence this thing. So then maybe they put it in their room, and every night before bed for 5 or 10 minutes, they'll sit there and they'll try to, quote-unquote, influence it or affect it with their intention. Well, this goes on for a long time, and I think what they come to find is that there, this whole issue of how do you create an intention and have a calm mind, or have a quiet mind, this whole trade-off is in and of itself almost a very special state, because there's sort of a process of observing something, but also wanting something to happen, but then also not being too attached to it. And it's almost like people will come back to us and they'll talk about words like resonance, or I was in tune with it,
mm-hmm.
the lamp and I were connected. You know, they talk about these things. And as they sort of develop almost, I mean, it's strange to say, but as they almost develop sort of a relationship with it in their own mind, they start to get a sense of where they want it to go. And then having that sense, but also being still and sort of focused, but not focused with a lot of willpower, somehow that enables it to shift. And they almost get good at it as if it's sort of its own form of action or its own way of being or interacting with something. And I'm really stumbling around my words for it, because I think that in 9 out of 10 cases, people come back to us and they really have no language to talk about it. They'll just say, you know, I developed a completely different state of mind or way of relating to this. And once I developed that over all this period of time, I was able to get an effect. And
yeah.
my own way of thinking is different now, and I can't quite articulate it. But it's really great, because now I have this ability to influence the thing, and I see it relating to my emotions, etc. So people are really happy about it, but the way of describing it is completely elusive.
Yeah, linguistics is definitely a problem in consciousness. Okay,
exactly.
I want to tell you one more thing, then I have some questions, more questions for you. I have a digital camera that I keep by my computer, and I randomly snap photographs when I do radio shows, particularly when I'm on the phone with somebody, to see what I see. And I just, as we were talking, I flipped back through the random pictures I've taken over the past few weeks, and I noticed that whenever this thing is that fuchsia color, that
mm-hmm.
pink kind of purplish pink kind of color, the room is always full of orbs. I mean, it's really kind of, there'll be hundreds of them, with several very, very big, bright ones when that thing's on that pink color. I don't know why, I just noticed it in the picture. Anyway.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I have no idea. I mean, the whole process is very mysterious and seems to be completely tied to the consciousness of individuals.
So interesting. Okay, my next thing is, if it's measuring consciousness, sitting here in my sacred space room,
mm-hmm.
how do I know it's measuring what's in this room, or my house, or my neighborhood, or the town I live in?
That's a great question. There's two answers. I mean, one answer is we have no idea. The other answer is that really all I can talk about is what this is based on. And when we go back to our experiments where, you know, we have an REG and it's producing its output, and we ask someone to sit down in front of it and view its output, the data seems to correspond with what that person is trying to do. So whatever is going on is completely complicated, because clearly, you know, we believe that people can influence it remotely. We have data on that, et cetera. But it's almost as if it really relates to the observer, or it relates to the person who is using it for a purpose. And
okay.
that seems to be it.
So if someone's not aware of it, it doesn't necessarily register the people who aren't aware.
Exactly.
Of it.
I mean, I can't say that with absolute authority, but that would be my interpretation, is that, you know, when someone goes off into that room to take part in one of our experiments, they're the only person at that point in time who has any idea what's happening with that data. And it could be registering what other people are thinking or doing or something like that. But at the end of the day, the data that we get seems to correspond to the person who's using it or relating to it and observing it, and not so much to the others. So.
Okay. So now I want to know a couple of things. I'm going to say several things, and you can pick how you want to answer it. I want to know, when it does go non-random all by itself, does that mean something's about to happen? Usually things happen, you know, within 2 or 3 days. Generally in physics, they've noticed that since time doesn't exist, it doesn't mean right now, but usually something happens in 2 or 3 days. And I want to know, how did you make this thing to do what it does? And 3, what does it mean to science, and what does it mean to deliberate creation?
Okay.
Pick
well,
anyone.
First, go ahead.
So pick anyone.
Oh, should I just pick one?
Well, I want them all, but if you can do all of them, that'd be great, and if you can't, that's all right, too.
All right, I'll see what I can do. So first, when you ask, is when it's not random, is something going to happen? Well, we don't really know. Again, that could be my answer a lot. But what I can say is that if a person is sitting there and they're able to make it exhibit non-random behavior, and if a person is in a state of mind where they're able to, you know, basically interact with it and create a shift in the data, well, it probably means that there's something special going on with that person, at least at that time relative to another time. And I would think that that probably means that it's a good time for a person to, you know, reflect, make some decisions, figure out what they want to do, because it kind of, so rather than saying that non-random behavior in the lamp means that something's going to happen, it may be that non-random behavior in the lamp is a reflection that a person is in a state or in a good state for some kind of exploration or creation or reflection or something like that.
All right, let me ask you a question here then. You know,
sure.
The thing that Roger Nelson has on his webpage,
yep.
that running thing that's active and when something's going on goes bing.
Yep.
Is that not the same kind of thing when this thing goes non-random? What does it mean when Roger's thing goes ding? It means something's happening somewhere, doesn't it?
Well,
a collective mass?
It's tricky because, so when Roger's system says ding, it means that a statistically significant deviation was registered in one of his REG devices.
Yeah.
But the problem with randomness is that that will happen by itself sometimes, too. So for any specific instance, let's say in a system like the Global Consciousness Project, you never quite know. The thing that helps a little bit with the REG, at least if you're sitting there and you feel like you're in a state where you can make a difference, and then you interact with the thing and you do see a non-random output, well, that starts to make it seem a lot like you were the cause of that, as opposed to just the system randomly doing that on its own. So hard for me to exactly compare and contrast the two, and it's really hard to draw any kind of specific inference about what's causing what. But since the operator, the observer, is able to impart non-randomness, I do at least feel a little bit comfortable saying that if you're sitting there with it and you see something happening, it probably means that you're in some kind of slightly different state.
Okay. And if my, let's say it's just in my house, mm-hmm. and I've noticed, just, I'm not saying I did notice, I'm just asking a question. Just say my family's in my house,
mm-hmm.
and I suddenly noticed that for the past 30 minutes, this thing's been non-random.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's paying attention to it. It's just suddenly gone non-random. What would that, what would you think that means, or just comment on that? I don't know how to ask that question.
Sure, sure. That one can get tricky because we did do a series of experiments called Field Reg at the Paralab, and we still today at Sileron have people conducting experiments in something called Field Reg. And the idea with Field Reg is that you might, let's say, take a random event generator with some software into, say, a business meeting or some kind of presentation or a family gathering, and you would run this thing, and you wouldn't be looking at its output at the time, but it would be running while you're, let's say, you're interacting with your family. And at least in the research papers that Pear published, and, you know, anecdotally from a lot of our users, it seems like certain kinds of interpersonal interactions are capable of shifting the output of the device. But then where it gets tricky is in terms of saying, well, what exactly is causing what? You know, is the shift in the output of the device telling me that people are happy or that they're sad or this, that, or the other thing? Or it's tricky to say that the group is influencing it rather than the person who knows that they're measuring it.
Mm-hmm.
But kind of ignoring those philosophical questions, it definitely seems like groups getting together and doing things where they feel enthusiastic and engaged and there's, you know, sort of a group cohesiveness. Those events do tend to add, they skew the output of the device in a sort of non-random way.
Okay. Now, what does it mean to science and deliberate creation?
Well, for
we've
science,
got 25
it's,
minutes.
Sure. In 5 minutes or 25?
25.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a big deal for science. I mean, I think an important thing to say about all of this is I don't want to come in here claiming that, you know, scientists around the world accept what we're talking about. There are plenty of people who are very interested in the data and who have looked at the results and said, wow, you know, there's no reason that results like this ever should have emerged, you know, due to chance. What we're doing means for science, if people are willing to accept it, is that there's some capacity of human beings or consciousness. You can call it intention, you can call it the ability to manifest, you can call it all kinds of stuff. But at the end of the day, people seem to be able to have an impact on the physical environment in a way that can't be explained by science right now. If you take conventional physics books and engineering books and you look at the prevailing understanding of reality that most scientists in mainstream positions in academia have right now, they would say there's no reason why intention, consciousness, etc. should be able to affect the physical world. Of course, as you know from your show, there are dozens, if not hundreds, of others who are conducting experiments like the ones we've conducted who are saying, no, you know what, there's some evidence that the human mind or consciousness can affect the physical world. The REG studies, I think, are a very well-controlled, easy-to-replicate way for scientists, so any scientist in the world who really wants to try this and has an open mind, to take something like our random event generator they want and sit down and conduct an experiment, you know, with a group of people and see for themselves whether or not it looks like the mind is able to create a non-random output. And if they find that it is, well, then they really have to step back and rethink a whole bunch of assumptions and ideas in science. Almost everything that they take for granted relating to their scientific method needs to be reconceptualized in light of this sort of data.
What does it mean for the world? What would it do? Why else should business be interested in it? Or should they? Should they even care?
It's a good question. I think I'll do it at two levels. One is that, let's say, why should individual people be interested in it or care about it? Well, there's the obvious philosophical issue that if this is true, it means that most people are walking around in a world that's completely different from what they believe it is based on their common sense. You know, their common sense says, well, here's this world, it's completely independent of me, and I don't affect it, I have no control over any of it, I'm just sort of floating around doing this kind of stuff. Well, at least at a philosophical level, if what we're saying is true, it means that people's attitudes, their beliefs, their feelings, their perceptions, their way of relating to the world can actually shape what that world does. So that's a completely different, it's just a completely different orientation towards things. So, sounds kind of philosophical, but then practically, at least I'll talk specifically about our devices, like let's say the lamp and the REG, etc. Well, if it is true that the mind and attitudes, etc. can affect the physical world, and that a person can then try this for themselves, and they can sit down and let's say that like one of our customers, they sit on the computer, they use it, or they look at the lamp and they use it, and they start to find that certain states of mind create an influence. Well, practically, I think it would be pretty important for most people to want to understand what states of mind they have and how these different states of mind and ways of relating to things actually do shape the physical environment. Because I don't know about anybody else, but, you know, given that I do believe that the mind influences the physical world, well, I want to know sort of what I'm putting out and how I shape things. So that's on the personal side, and that's just practical. Like, why should someone care? Well, they should care because if they really are affecting things, they probably want to affect them in a way that's, you know, beneficial to themselves and to others rather than, let's say, having sort of a negative attitude or just creating what they don't want.
Is that what you do when you do consulting work for people?
Oh, well, actually, our consulting is much more on the research side. You know, I'm being pretty freewheeling in a lot of my discussion here, but most of what we do is help other researchers to study this issue of can the mind influence the devices. So at that level, there it's almost just pure data and a pure scientific question, and I'm talking a lot more about what happens when an individual person tries to use it. Longer term, though, if you want to talk about consulting or business or why should business care, well, given what we're seeing, I mean, I mentioned before that it seems like the dynamics of a group can shape the output some way. Well, as we come to understand that, I mean, remember, at least from a science standpoint, this is in its very early stages, we may come to find that when people are happy or on the same page or really feeling connected and loving towards one another, we create one kind of output on the device. when they're feeling the opposite of that, it creates a different kind of output. Well, there's at least two things. One is that it becomes a measuring apparatus for understanding how groups are relating to one another. But two, you know, it may help people, let's forget this whole idea of influencing the physical world. It may help people to reflect on themselves and learn how to interact more positively and efficiently in groups, get along with one another better, create team outcomes that the whole team wants to create, and sort of get beyond sort of some of the personal motives or conflict that would occur when people aren't really being self-reflective and relating to one another in a positive way.
Okay. So my next question is, how did you get this a machine to be sensitive to, I guess, I don't know if we say electromagnetic field or if we say mind or energy field. How did you get it to become sensitive to what's going on with a human being?
Sure. Well, it's a good question. And the funny thing about it all is that this actually went the other way around, in the sense that 30-some-odd years ago, there was a student in the engineering school at Princeton who went to her dean of engineering and said, I want to conduct an experiment to see if the human mind is able to influence the output of these random event generator devices.
I'm aware of that.
I'm sorry, what was that?
I know about that.
I
want to know is what did you do on the inside of this little chip down in the bottom of this lamp to make that happen? I mean, to make this lamp feel me. Or whoever it is.
Sure. So the funny thing is, it's almost an accident, because what happened was this girl wanted to conduct a study. A study was conducted, and the data said, hey, the mind seems to be able to influence it. So it wasn't like we woke up and said, let's build a device that can respond to the mind. We conducted an experiment and found that there was a device that did seem to respond to the mind, and the lamp specifically was just... You know, we took the kinds of devices that were used at the lab, and we used regular, plain old engineering to shrink it down and make it a little bit better.
Can you tell me, in layman's term, because I'm so interested in this, but I want to understand, and I don't have the language,
sure.
How did you make a computer? Did you do it with wires? You know, what is it just some kind of energy in there? What is in that thing that feels, can detect human emotion or human energy? What, I don't know what to call it.
Sure. So the device is just a regular electric circuit. You know, there's microchips and wires and capacitors and resistors. And what it's doing, though, is it's measuring what's called the quantum tunneling of electrons through a junction in a field effect transistor. And what that really means is that you've got these little, you know, particles called electrons, and because of quantum mechanics, that there's some chance that they will actually teleport through, let's say it's an imaginary little wall that they should not otherwise teleport through. And whether they do that or not, as far as regular science and physics is concerned, completely random. Why we call it a random event generator. It should just be totally unpredictable. There should be nothing that influences it. So we've got these little electrons that are, you know, randomly jumping through a wall, a really, really tiny wall, you know, an electric wall inside the circuit. And we can measure how many of them are doing that, and that could actually a signal, which, again, according to regular physics and engineering, should be completely random. We sample that, you know, using, again, a bunch of regular electronic circuit components, and we have a chip that's reading it and sending it to the computer. But really, the most interesting point to take away from it at the end of your day, I think, is that you've got this process, which regular science says should be totally random. It's a quantum process. It's very small. It exists at a microscopic, below a microscopic scale. It's so small that, you know, you would never interact with anything that size in the regular physical world. And it should be random, yet somehow intention or consciousness seems to influence it.
Okay.
And depending on how far you want to go, it could mean, or it probably means in some ways, that human consciousness is affecting everything that occurs at that really, really low scale. So all we did was we took a phenomenon that was really small and that was random, and that, you know, was a fundamentally statistical or probabilistic quantum process. And we build a plain old circuit to measure that, and then we use that to control the light. So if you're making that light change colors, if you want to think about it in sort of a, well, how is it happening kind of sense, it's almost as if something in your, about you, you know, your mind, your consciousness, your intention, is able to tweak the way that the probabilistic events manifest themselves. So it's almost like you're somehow making the, you could say you're somehow making the little electrons behave differently based on what you're doing. But really, it probably means that you as the observer or the one interacting with this experiment shape the way that the experiment comes out, because there's some much deeper connection between you and, you know, those all, possibly all, truly probabilistic processes in the physical world.
Does it have anything at all to do with magnetism? And, you know, Bill Tiller talks about magnetic monopoles. Does it have anything to do with that at all? Or do you know?
Well, the interesting thing is that probably not, but I don't know for sure. The reason I say probably not is because one of the big concerns in the early days of these experiments was that people said, hey, you know what, we see that you've got an effect, but it must just be due to, let's say, the electromagnetic output of someone's brain, or it might be that there's some kind of magnetic field in the environment that's skewing the output of the devices. So in response to that, or even knowing that that was going to come up ahead of time, we built the random event generator devices in such a way that they should not be able to be affected by any kind of traditional electromagnetic or magnetic field. So regular magnetic fields, let's say, should not influence it. But the reason I said probably not is that if you start talking about different kinds of magnetic fields or magnetic monopoles or things like that, that's a whole different realm that I don't really know anything about. That kind of gets away from traditional and classical electromagnetics anyway. So when you get into that, it's up for grabs. But the special thing that I talk about with the REG is just that no regular form of electricity or magnetism should ever be able to affect it.
Okay.
So if you are affecting it, it's using some process that is not captured by traditional physics yet.
Okay. Let's see how much time. We've got about 10 minutes. I'd like to give you time to talk about what you want to talk about now.
Sure. Well, I'm pretty much happy to talk about anything.
Do you have some stories that were interesting that you, where you played with it yourself or friends played with it? Anything you want to talk about?
I can tell you about one of our other products that might be interesting to you and your audience. It's called ThinkTech. And the idea here is actually not, well, it's similar to the Global Consciousness Project. We have this thing called ThinkText, and it's at www.thinktext.com. And what that does is, when you sign up for it, it takes a random event generator in some distant location. So you're in Georgia, it might be in Hawaii, or it might be in California, or it might be in New Jersey. And it assigns the output of that, or it assigns a portion of the output of that random event generator, let's say, to you. And you go to this webpage and you enter in a list of messages. The messages could range from, you know, stay calm and focused, to call someone in your family, to make sure you remember, you know, to meditate, anything.
Right, give me that spell again, because I'm doing it as you talk. Tell me it again.
Oh, sure. It's www.thinktext.com.
Okay, so I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just want to see
what. Oh, it's no problem at all.
Go ahead.
So you go to this webpage, and essentially what ends up happening is that you get a portion of a random event generator assigned to you, and at times that should be random, but, you know, in our system actually aren't random, it will send you one of your messages on your cell phone. So the idea is that, you know, you would just be walking around in your day-to-day life, and all of a sudden your phone will buzz, and you pick it up and you look at it, and it will say, you know, don't forget to meditate. Or it will say something, and whatever what it will say will be based on messages that you pre-entered.
That's really interesting.
Right. And so what makes it, the point of it, I guess, or the real kicker, is that even though the messages are supposed to be random, one of the reasons we put this out there is because in our own internal testing and playing around with it, we started to find that in a lot of cases, particularly when we were in this sort of state that would allow us to do well with the REG or the LAMP, we would receive messages that seemed to be really appropriate relative to whatever we were doing. So I had a message at one point that said something like, pay more attention to the ideas of others. And the reason that I came up with that was because my staff were saying, like, hey, John, you know, we really wish you would pay more attention to our ideas and let us come up with more ideas, et cetera. And in one of this, when we first put the system together for internal use, you know, I went in the room to talk to one of my colleagues and said, oh, John, I have this great idea, and we went into this big thing. And I was about to say, well, you know, I'm not sure that that idea is going to work. But before I even said anything, my phone buzzed, and I picked it up, and I looked at it, and it said, pay more attention to the ideas of others.
That's amazing. I love it. So
yeah,
synchronicity, so, that's the on here, it's a synchronicity kind of thing.
Exactly. So the idea is to kind of try to give people another angle to generate lots of meaningful synchronicity in their life. You put in messages that, you know, would be helpful to you in one way or another, or to remind yourself of something, or that you think it would be useful to receive them. And then the idea is that you start to receive them at times, or you can start to receive them at times that actually are really helpful, because it might change the way that you do something, or it might give you a piece of insight that you didn't have, or it might just provide some great food for thought at a really appropriate time that then causes you to, you know, say do something differently. And we've had a lot of users coming back to us and saying, like, wow, this is really neat. I've gotten some great messages, and they really helped me. Well, all different things. I mean, some people have used it in relationships, others have used it relative to jobs. Some have used it just for the sake of, you know, reminding themselves of things that they care about. Stuff
like
that.
It'd be kind of interesting if you just had a database of like 1,000 little, what is it, fortune cookie things, and then it just randomly sent something that by itself. It'd be interesting.
Yeah, we're actually adding that feature now. So when we started it, the idea was that people make up their own database of messages. And by making up their own list, it would sort of be more customized to what they wanted to use it for. But a lot of people have come to us and said, hey, it would be really fun if I just could just get any message, you know, without any preconceived notions, et cetera.
Yeah, and it's cheap. I see it's for people who want to try it. It's $6.50 a month. And you don't have to buy anything. You just sign up.
Yep, and what we right now we have a free promo code so people can try it free for 7 days, and it's, you know, it's the idea is that we want people to try it and see if it works for them, and see if it provides any value. If it doesn't, you know, there's a cancel button, you can cancel it right away. But if it does, we're really expanding on the system so that people can add sort of journal entries to themselves, they can share their stories with others and things like that, because we're also finding, and this is interesting, that as more and more people do it and talk with one another about it, it seems to get a little bit better for all the people who are doing it with other people, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. That's really so cool. It's a great idea.
Yeah, maybe we're really hoping that it will have a positive impact on the people who use it and just sort of help them to, you know, stay mindful in their day-to-day life and also, you know, think about what they're doing better.
I'm doing it. All right, John. Tell us one more time where to find you. Anything else you want to say? Got a couple of minutes.
Sure. You can find us on the I'm John Valentino from Siluron, and you can find me on the web at www.siluron.com. And I guess, yeah, I don't really have much else to say except take a look at the material. I mean, our whole point is to, you know, today I was going way out there and making a lot of statements about what our users are reporting and what we think the meaning of this is. But at the end of the day, we're really just trying to figure all of this out, and we hope that it will have a positive impact on people and a positive impact on society, and that, you know, science will be advanced by understanding what's going on here. So I think, you know, we love feedback from others. We love when people use our stuff and learn more, and then come back to us and tell us, like, hey, here's what I learned, here's how it impacted my life. So we're really open, and, you know, we'd love to hear from more from you or from anybody else who's listening to this who has something to share.
Well, I applaud you, and I wish if you, you know, a year down the road or 6 months down the road, if you find a breakthrough or learn something new, please call me and come back.
I'd
love to give everybody an update on what you learn throughout, you know, over time with both of these things. And thanks.
Yep, and the whole point is really just to learn. So we're trying to collect everything we can from people, collect more data, and just figure out what's going on.
Well, I think it's fabulous, and I thank you for taking the time to come on.
Well, thank you. I'm glad I could make it.
Good night, John, and come back.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health.
Integral Health.
You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health.
Just
tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m.
7 p.m.
to Infinite Consciousness with Eva Harris.